Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds, and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFLUK.com. And we are coming to you live 5:15 in the morning, Jeff. I'm joining your world. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, the home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I'm up bright and early as well, Jeff. I'm in Indianapolis. Yeah, and I haven't had a coffee yet either, so it's. I know how you feel now.
Yeah, you're about 6 hours south of me right now, but I'm sitting outside the door of the coffee shop like a lonesome dog wanting to come home. You know, these girls are inside getting it ready. They haven't even opened yet, so it is my world right now, you know.
So we're going to have a little bit of news from around the NFL. We'll take some of your questions in the mailbag. But I've been to the first of my training camp stops, Jeff. So as I mentioned to you previous, 5 days, five camps. The Indianapolis Colts was the first one up yesterday. We're heading to the Cincinnati Bengals today, the Minnesota Vikings tomorrow, the LA Rams on Sunday, and the Washington Redskins on Monday. So it was... Man, it was hot. I'm going to give you the very British view, first of all. I was melting. It was hot, but it was good fun.
Let me ask you a question. Did you sense anything different about the attitude in Colts camp with, you know, now, you know, the quarterback back under contract, you know, Pagano back under contract? You know, is it a little more settled there than it was last year?
Yeah, I think quite a few of the people, you know, we're talking when we were asking them questions, you try and get that line where, you know, where we think we're a Super Bowl team or we think we're a playoff team, and they were being quite cautious with that, as you would expect. And T.Y. Hilton actually said that was different in terms of their previous approaches, that they had quite often said at the start of a season, we're going for the Super Bowl, but they really are kind of, yeah, taking it that old cliche, one game at a time. But I got the sense with everyone I spoke to that, you know, there's a confidence about this team, because this was a team that won eight games even without Andrew Luck for 9 weeks of last season. So I think across the board they felt very confident. They feel very settled, as you said. That's I think a good way to describe it. They are all sort of talking about it one game at a time, except Mike Adams, the veteran safety, the two-time Pro Bowler in the last couple of years. He was like, I need a Super Bowl. I've been in 13 years and I haven't got one. So they were, you know, I think they're so glad to have Andrew Luck back, of course. I would say that they definitely feel like they're the team to beat in the AFC South again.
Was there any sense, Neil, around the team about, you know, the soap opera of last year, and was Ursay around? You know, he's such a kind of in your face, hands on owner, much like Jerry Jones. Did he have a presence in camp yesterday?
No, not at all. No, you didn't see him. Didn't see him anywhere. Ryan Grigson was there, but there was nothing about that kind of came up. It just feels like everything feels like they've sort of put that sort of part behind them. I asked Chuck Pagano about the contract extension, and he was very good actually on his whole interview. You'll find this interesting. He spoke a lot about his when he had cancer and being a cancer survivor and how it changes your attitude. And he said, I still want to get to that mountaintop, but he said it makes you realize that you're playing a kid's game. So, I mean, that pressure will go once that pressure will be there, and that kind of relaxed approach will go once the regular season starts. But he was, he was quite eye-opening and very in-depth on that stuff. And we finished the interview, Jeff, and we were kind of chatting a little bit afterwards, and I said something about being a coach, and he was like, do you want to swap and be in my shoes for one day? I said, no, thank you. I said, there are no wins and losses in the studio. But we saw, I was going to ask you this, Jeff. We saw a scout. I assume he was a scout because you coaches were all back in Hamilton. There was a guy on the sidelines with Hamilton Tiger Cats gear on, taking notes. Is that what your team does? Do they go around NFL training camps? Are you looking for talent all the time?
Right, exactly. Right now, all of the teams in the Canadian Football League have their personnel people out in the NFL camps. Much like when we go to training camp, the NFL people send their personnel people to watch our team. It's constant, you know, evaluation of players. It's the next guy is that might, you know, might become available. It might be a guy like a Brandon Banks who, you know, is a 3-year player in the NFL and gets to that salary cap position where he's got to make a decision whether you're going to keep him or not as a returner, and, you know, he becomes available and comes in and has a huge impact in our league. Or it might be a guy that, you know, for them, that like Terrell Sinkfield, our receiver last year, that you'll see in Minnesota, who, you know, came out of college and had made a position change and, you know, lit it up in the CFL and is now trying to make it in the NFL. So, you know, there's a lot of shared information around you know, football and around the leagues, and it's, you know, player personnel evaluation is such a big part of this, because it's, you got to have talent. You got to renew that talent supply. Speaking of talent, you know, tell me about the defense in Indianapolis. You have a sense that they've improved on, you know, because that to me is where that team's got improved.
Couple of things. I sat down and spoke with Vontae Davis, and he was full of confidence. He still feels he's one of the very best in the NFL and quite bullish on that. Henry Anderson, who was impressive as a defensive tackle last year as a rookie, was walking around on the sidelines. He's still on the physically unable to perform list. But I watched about the first hour of practice, Jeff, and the defense was on top whenever they did stuff in team drills. So I don't know whether that's a sign that the defense is going to come together, or whether that's just really that kind of indication that defenses get ahead of offenses early in training camp. A couple of nice plays. There was a few times DeQuell Jackson, who's obviously got a great nose for the football, makes a lot of tackles. He was, he stuffed and sniffed out a couple of screen passes, and Mike Adams got Andrew Luck on a safety blitz on one play in the team drills, which would have been a sack. So I would say actually it was a good day for the defense, but you just early in camp like this, you don't know if it's just a product of them being, you know, ahead of the curve when it comes to the offense. On offense, that's what I've said to you before, Jeff. I think if any of our listeners can get to an NFL camp, or if they're ever on a holiday in America and camps are going on, they should try and get to one. This one was open to the Colts fans. You just see different parts of the game when you're not watching on TV. So Andrew Luck had two back-to-back passes. One was a post to T.Y. Hilton, and he's thrown that ball 10 or 12 yards in front of T.Y. Hilton before he makes his break, and then Hilton gets there and makes the catch. The very next play, it's like a sort of 20-yard deep out to Dante Moncrief. His back's to the ball for a good second or so when Andrew throws it, and the ball's there as he turns. I mean, the timing of this stuff is incredible. Andrew had one play late in the team drills where it just made you go, wow. He dropped the ball over the head of the linebacker, Eric Walden, before the safety got in there, hit Philip Dorsett, and it was one of those where you had half a second and probably about a yard or two to make the throw. I mean, you actually see these guys in the flesh up close, and the timing that's involved is incredible.
I agree with you. If the fans could watch practice and get down on the field like you're down on the field, the athleticism of these players and the skill that they have is absolutely jaw-dropping. And they're so big, and they're so fast, and they're so explosive. And really, television doesn't do it justice. You really have to see it up close and personal. And I remember the first time when I was on the field in pro football, and you stand behind the huddle for a team period, and you realize what that quarterback has to stand, you know, with guys buzzing around him and as big as those guys are chasing him. And whatever they're paying those guys is not enough. I'm going to tell you something. That is incredible when a ball snaps. Just the sound and the energy that's released by those big people as they go after each other is a phenomenal thing.
Jeff, I know we talked about this in the past, about what goes into a training camp practice, and you see it all the time. We were doing interviews on the training camp field after the morning walkthrough, and that was about probably, we started interviews about 10:45. We started with Adam Vinatieri, so it was 10:45, and they were already setting out things in the background for the afternoon practice, which started at 1:45. They were putting, and they had, American footballs. They had soccer balls for some of the special teams work that they were doing. They had footballs hanging from goalposts. I mean, they had everything. And it was interesting to see so many people laying out a field, and they were walking out, these equipment people and assistants, and they were saying, well, we're working off this training camp script today. So it's all scripted. Everything's laid out as we'd discussed in the past. But this was interesting to me. There was a guy sitting under a tent, and he was sitting under a tent with a laptop the whole time, and all the players were talking to him as he went past, and I had no idea who he was. And then about halfway through this practice session, the trainer ran over to the guy sitting with the laptop and said, anything in the area we should worry about? And the guy looked at his computer and then looked up at the sky and went, nothing to worry about, everything's fine. And then he said, then the trainer went, just keep an eye on that heat index. If it gets above, and then I couldn't hear what he said, if it gets above a certain level, then they might take more water breaks. So they've got somebody there the whole time monitoring the weather.
Yeah, you know what, and what's interesting, you know, is the players now, with all the analytics and you know, the biomechanics and all the stuff that they're doing, the players now have a little microchip that they wear in their shirt that the strength and conditioning coaches, by the second, can monitor how much, you know, body fluid they've lost, what their heart rates are, how much they've run, all of those things, you know, up to the second. Feedback during practice, which is, you know, absolutely phenomenal. And you talk about the numbers of equipment staff, but the training staff is huge during training camp because they'll bring in extra trainers because you got more players to deal with, and there's more, you know, more taping, more time spent in the training room and repairing guys, getting ready to go. It is a huge undertaking when you take a football team and go away. I believe they go to Rose Holman University in
They're in Anderson University.
Yeah, okay, at Anderson University. And, you know, you go to a college campus and basically you bring your whole facility with you. I mean, it's a huge undertaking. And, you know, it's interesting, especially when you're in the Midwest where the weather can change so fast in the summer. The humidity is such a factor, and lightning. And, you know, the trainers have you seen that little machine that the trainers have? Looks like a little propeller.
Yep.
That they'll hold up during practice, and that's to measure whether there's lightning in the air, when those storms that blow through the Midwest, you know, it's incredible. It's a huge, huge deal. And everything, like you say, everything is scripted down to the most minute detail, where every ball is placed on the field, where every bag is placed, where every drill is done. And, you know, you're trying to organize and, you know, move guys, you know, 100 football players and coaches, you know, move them and orchestrate practice. It's a huge, huge undertaking.
So, well, even though it's scripted, though, Jeff, then with what you said about the trainers, can that script change? Because there are a couple of the, you know, you get the little practice sessions and it shows on the clock 8 minutes and it counts down. There were a couple of those yesterday where they were about 4 minutes in and then the horn blew and they just fast-forwarded those last few minutes off the clock. It was almost as if they decided, well, we're not doing that session for 8 minutes, we're going to do it for four. So can things change on the fly based on scientific stuff they're looking at with players, or just a general feel from the coaches?
Well, I think it's based on a couple of things. Number one, like I said, if the biomechanics people feel like players are, you know, getting too much work, if they're dehydrated, if they run too much, whatever it is, they can curtail it. But also, if you block a time, let's say you say 8 minutes, you want to get five plays run in an inside run period. If you get your five plays in, then you just move on to the next period. You don't stand around and wait for the, you know, or get extra reps, or you just move on. Because one of the things you find out with football players, especially at the highest level, once you're in pro football, these guys are really, really valuable commodities, and you want to make sure you get them on and off the field as fast as you can get them on and off the field, and, you know, get them off their feet, get them, you know, protect their legs. All those things are factors, you know, as you lay out a practice plan and as you go through practice. And I think the really good head coaches, they have a kind of feel for their team. They get a sense of how hard they work, and, you know, if they're working at a high level and if they're working at a good pace, a lot of times you'll see them, you know, back them off a little bit and reward them. And if they're not working, you'll see them drive them a little harder. So, you know, that's all part of the feel of being a head coach. Some guys have a real sense for that. I know Coach Romeo had, after he'd been a head coach so many years, you really get a sense for the, you know, for your football team and have the pulse of your team.
Jeff, it was a very quiet training camp. We've talked about that in the past. No music for the Colts. Lots of teams go with the heavy music and lots of music. Nice and quiet for the Colts. It was almost serene. It was the fans sort of were quite quiet and letting the players do their work. Yeah, I would just say this on camp. If you kind of think it's all like Hard Knocks with, you know, pads and everyone bodies flying everywhere, it's not. It certainly wasn't yesterday. There were some long periods where they almost reverted back to walkthrough, because I guess you coaches have still got, especially early in training camp, we're early in NFL camp at the moment, you've still got teaching to do and make sure people are in the right position.
Yeah, and you know what? In early in camp, what you're basically doing now is going back through what your OTA installation schedule was. Mm. So when you get your players back in for OTAs, you start at the foundational, you know, your inside run, your pass routes, your basic stuff, the basic fundamentals or the basic parts of your offense, defense, and special teams, and then you build from there. But you always go back to your core plays and then build off of that. So they're not only practicing, they're installing and trying to get more football in as they go. That's one of the things that you'll notice, Neil, as you go through camps. There'll be young guys, particularly rookies, that will flash really, really well early in camp, and then all of a sudden they'll start to tail off, and it's because they just can't handle the amount of information, the amount of football. You know, it's not unusual, and this may sound crazy to the listeners, but it's not unusual for a young defensive back who maybe played 5 coverages in college football. He'll have 15 coverages put in the very first day, and all the adjustments off those coverages the very first day of, you know, being in the NFL. And that's why your ability to handle information and process information is so critical in your ability to make a football team.
It's interesting you say that, Jeff, because when I interviewed Philip Dorsett yesterday, he talked about that transition as a young rookie receiver from college to the pros, and Philip had some injuries last year. He and the Colts expect him to have an expanded role in 2016, part of a 3-receiver attack with T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief. But he was saying when he was in college, he saw 2, maybe 3 coverages in his entire college career. He said in the NFL, they throw everything at you. So you kind of see it from the other side there. There's a lot to absorb.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the thing about it, it's not only the complexity of it and so many more coverages, all the adjustments off of them, all the route adjustments, and, you know, we always talk about how a confused player can't play fast. Well, Philip Dorsett, one of the things he has best is the ability to be vertical and run. But when you're trying to figure out, well, was that cover 3? Was that cover 2? You know, was that a weak side rotation? Well, if it's weak side rotation, I've got to go to the post. And if it's strong side rotation, I run the hook. That's a lot of stuff to process while you're trying to run. Mm. And so it takes guys. That's one of the reasons it takes guys longer. Plus, you know, all of the techniques that you see in pro football, you know, are so much more refined and so much more defined. And you know, like, for example, he probably never saw very much press man in college football.
Right.
Then all of a sudden he gets up there and there's Dante Davis standing across the line from you, who's, you know, big and strong and, you know, excels at press. And so, you know, it's a jump for every kid.
It certainly is. So that's the Indianapolis Colts. We're off to the Cincinnati Bengals straight after this podcast. Let's take a little bit of news, Jeff. Ryan Fitzpatrick finally signed with the New York Jets. We've been waiting for this one. Jets fans have been waiting for this one for months to fend off Geno Smith. It's a 1-year deal, $12 million. There are about 22 or 23 quarterbacks, Jeff, around the NFL as starters who are going to get paid more than Ryan Fitzpatrick. So he's not broke the bank, but I think importantly for him, he got a 1-year deal. The Jets wanted to tie him in for 3 years. I think he wants to bet on himself and have that chance to hit the market again if necessary. This just makes sense, doesn't it? They needed this guy in there.
Yeah, you know what? I know there was a lot of, you know, wringing of hands and gnashing of teeth and, you know, nervousness in Jet Nation, but you knew this was going to get done. And I think it's a good deal on both sides. Here's why. The Jets getting for a reduced price, which helps them in the cap. And for Fitz, it's just like you mentioned. It's an opportunity now to have another year like he had last year. And, you know, Neil, the value of a quarterback, particularly a starting quarterback in the NFL, and if he can get that team to the playoffs, it's not going to go down. His value will, you know, skyrocket. And so he's, like you said, I think that's a great way to put it. He's betting on himself here. And, you know, you look at, you know, how quarterback starved the league is, and, you know, you supply and demand economics is what it is. And he's a Harvard guy, and he's smart enough to know that, you know, in another year, if he has the kind of season that he had, and he should, they're a good football team around him, and he's very comfortable in Shane Gailey's system. And, you know, I think it's a good thing for both sides. It's interesting to me, when all these things happen, you know, what I really want to see is, what's the fallout? What's the reaction that you get from his teammates? Interesting, I thought, was Geno Smith saying, I'm a little pissed off that they signed. You know, again, what does that tell you, number one, about Geno Smith? Number two, about what that locker room's going to be like? Because there's going to be the Brandon Marshalls and the Eric Beckers that are going to be ecstatic because they got the quarterback back. But then there also can be those little fissures in your team that, you know, can you know, be divisive. So I think it's real important for Fitz to get back in that locker room, get on the field, and just be the quarterback now.
Well, Brandon Marshall's so confident that he challenged Antonio Brown, didn't he? Made a bet, challenged him to a bet. He wants, if he has more receiving yards than Antonio Brown, then he wants the Rolls Royce that Brown turned up in a training camp. I'm not quite sure what Brandon's going to give up, but he obviously is very happy to have Fitzpatrick back. One quarterback, Jeff, who's not banking on himself, certainly not in Los Angeles, is Nick Foles. So he asks for his release and gets it. Just from how he's going to be viewed around the NFL now, are teams going to look at Nick Foles and say, there's a guy who didn't have the confidence to beat out Case Keenum and Jared Goff? Or is that just the reality that the Rams had their guys and Nick Foles was smart to get out?
I think there's two ways to look at that. Number one, you know, you're going to say, here's a guy, this guy's a Pro Bowl quarterback, right? I think 2013 it was, he went to the Pro Bowl. And you look at his touchdowns to interception ratio over his career, and you say, this guy's got a chance. This guy's a guy that can play a little bit. Now, what you might be concerned about is just, you know, what kind of guy is he? You know, why doesn't he not want to stay and compete against a rookie? You know, I think it was really interesting. There was some subcurrent to this. When Fisher was really okay with him not showing up for minicamps and OTAs, that sent a message to me that if Jeff was saying, yeah, it's okay, he doesn't need to show up, then basically I think what he's saying is, hey, you know, the guy's past his time here. We're going to move on, and we're going with the young guy and Case Keenum and so on. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a, you know, a feeling out period. I think all the personnel people are going to want to get to him, not his agent, but actually get to Nick himself and you know, just get a feel for how you got to understand now, this is a guy that a couple years ago was in Philadelphia and everybody was saying it was going to be a star.
Yeah.
Then he gets bounced out of Philadelphia. Now he's bounced out of St. Louis. So, you know, there'll be a lot of people sniffing around saying, well, what's the problem? What's the hole in him? Well, you know, all that kind of stuff, because, you know, he's a commodity, but, you know, he's bounced out of two organizations now in the last three years. So it'll be interesting to see how this one unfolds.
A couple of other bits of news. Rolando McClain had a 10-game drug suspension now. Josh Gordon's been reinstated, which is vital for the Cleveland Browns. Mike Zimmer and Pete Carroll get contract extensions. Those make total sense to me, Jeff. It looks like Le'Veon Bell might miss the first four games with a suspension, although he's appealing that suspension. The Steelers are well placed with D'Angelo Williams in place, but, you know, this is another little chink in that. We look at the Steelers' offensive armor, that would be another little chink in it, because this is a team that could go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know what, Neil, it's so frustrating to, you know, when these guys with the drug suspension thing. I mean, you know, McClain, and you know, and then Le'Veon Bell, and you hear about missed drug tests and just stuff that you go, come on, man, your teammates are counting on you. You're a guy that's going to help. We're a team that can, you know, you're talking about of maybe the 10 teams in the league where you say that team's got a legitimate chance to be a Super Bowl contender, and now you may lose him over something like that. It's hard enough, and you know, we have a saying in pro football, it's hard to win in pro football, and it is, and it's really hard. guys in the locker room because they know they're a better football team with Le'Veon Bell.
On that, Jeff, we'll take a couple of questions in the mailbag because the first one is about Le'Veon Bell and it's from Mike Farrell, who says, you read a tweet out from me before about Le'Veon Bell. Do you think the Steelers will still sign him to a big contract now given more drug-related issues? That's a good point, Jeff. The Steelers might go year to year on the franchise tag and have Bell show them that he can stay out of trouble rather than give a big deal.
Yeah, and you know, wouldn't you? I mean, think about it. You're the owner. You're one of the Rooneys, or you're a general manager, or, you know, and you guys are sitting down and saying, okay, you know, how are we going to divide this? How are we going to get money? What are we going to invest in? Who are the guys we can count on? Who do we want to be the face of the franchise in Pittsburgh? And all of those questions come in to play when you talk about a guy's contract and his future. And these guys, they do themselves no good by, you know, being involved in this kind of stuff. And it's really sad. It's really frustrating. And certainly it's going to cost him money. You know, just from a pure economic standpoint, it's going to cost him money. And, you know, you have such a short window. You have such a small, you know, opportunity to succeed in a short, you know, lifespan, I guess you can say, in pro football. And gosh almighty, you don't want to see one of your teammates just throwing it away because you know, can't stay away from, you know, drugs. It's just frustrating.
Jeff, here's one from Luke McCabe, who says, a documentary is like the new Cardinals series and Hard Knocks, which will feature the LA Rams this year. Do you think they're a great insight for fans, or do they put a hindrance on a team? It's both, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to say I'm a fan of it, first and foremost. I like it because I think it's good for the fans to see the inside and how it really does work. But it can be a distraction, and if you allow it to be, it can be a huge distraction because, you know, there is a certain amount of, I think it's, you know, a sanctuary, the locker room. It belongs to the players. And when cameras are in there, and particularly at the really tough times, because obviously if you're doing a show like Hard Knocks or, you know, or the Cardinals series, you want the reaction, you want the drama, you want the, you know, the, all of the stuff that's going to make viewers sit up and take notice. Well, some of that stuff, as a football team and as a football coach and an organization, you don't want some of that stuff out. And there's a certain amount of, you know, I know in a locker room, yeah, I was in one time, there's a sign on the wall that said, what you see here, what you say here, what you do here, let it stay here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of changed. That's all kind of changed now with all the access that the media has, which I understand, and you're marketing your team and you're marketing the game. But, you know, from a pure team standpoint, there is a point where you just got to say, hey, you know, turn the camera off. This is player sanctuary. This is their time and their place.
Yeah. Some of these players just want to concentrate all about football, Jeff. I've been pre-warned that AJ Green of the Cincinnati Bengals likes to play a game with the media and escape if he can and run out the back door, and he's on my list today, so I'll let you know how I get on.
Well, I tell you what, tell Jamie to run interference for him. If you see him heading out the back door, cross body blocking him.
You remember that AJ Green's quite fast, right?
Yeah, well, that's why I say he's got to get him before he gets into open space.
Yeah, get him going.
Get him in a confined area and go low, go after this. Chop blocking, something like that. He's got a better chance. But
going
he can't
low.
Stay high on it. Because
going low and hard.
Here's the breakdown on AJ Jamie. He's got a great swim move. He's tough against press coverage, and you gotta sneak him.
There you go. Our producer, Jamie King, is giving double thumbs up there, Jeff, so we're ready for that. One more question, a little bit of a football history and a bit of X's and O's. It comes from Dave Scott, who says, Jeff, when people talk about a West Coast offense, what do they mean in terms of X's and O's?
You know what? That's a really, really good question. And when you talk about the West Coast, as you go around and you see teams that run versions of it, and most of the teams in the league run some of it, it's predicated on short, quick timing passes where the quarterback will take the snap and he's 1, 2, 3 and the ball's out right now. The routes are very, very defined and it's very choreographed. The routes are based on depth and to get a slant off the backside, and that's, you know, Steve Young or Montana or whoever was playing quarterback, you take that three-step drop and boom, that ball would be on him so fast that, you know, it's tough to rush it because you can't get there fast enough. And, you know, if you play cushion, the balls, you know, you're catching a lot of balls underneath. So that's really what it's predicated upon, is spreading the ball around and, you know, quick intermediate passes and short, quick drops by the quarterback.
And West Coast
quarterback has great, requires quarterback has great decision making and accuracy, like yeah. Montana did. Montana never had a big arm, you know that.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
He had such a great sense of anticipation and touch, and he could get the ball in small windows. And so that's why I think he was so well suited to that offer.
Yeah, and they played out on the West Coast, hence the name. Yeah, Bill Walsh as the head coach. Montana told me once, Jeff, it was, you know, some of his throws were kind of long handoffs, but it was all based on timing and space. And like you said, it was finding little, you know, maybe spreading a defense horizontally rather than vertically. You didn't have to throw it 50 yards downfield, but it's been effective, and that, you know, it stood the test of time, so it must have been effective.
Yeah, and you know what, like I say, just like the run and shoot, just like, you know, most of the offenses that come into vogue, people will, if they don't buy into the system 100%, they buy in at least to pieces and parts of the system. So there are very few pure, quote, West Coast teams anymore, but most of the teams in the league do have some West Coast to their offense. You know, Ben McAdoo brought that to the Giants. You know, and that was one of the things that they felt when they went that way with the Giants. One of the things they needed to do was get the ball out of Manning's hands faster. Mm. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why you saw his, after he went through the initial kind of, you know, transition from Kevin Gilbride's offense to Ben McAdoo's offense, you saw that, you know, the ball got out faster. He was sacked less. His completion percentage went higher. And those are all products of, you know, West Coast passing game.
Jeff, one more piece of news. Good news for British American football fans. F.A. Abada, the defensive end who was previously with the London Warriors, then went off to the Dallas Cowboys, had a little look with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's been signed by the Atlanta Falcons. So good to see F.A. get another shot, because, you know, you coaches don't give up these training camp spots lightly, do you? So.
No, and if the guy's going to be in training camp, he's got to have a chance. Now, let me tell you something. We have been waiting on that guy for about 3 years now. And so, you know, it was interesting when Dallas originally cut him, we got a call from Will McClay, the personnel guy in Dallas, and they wanted to actually send him to us, and because he needs to play. That's yeah. The biggest thing. Effie had so much ability, but he's so raw. He's so far behind just in terms of game snaps and opportunity to play. You know, Will thought it was a great opportunity for him to come up here, so we were actually in the process of getting him up here, and he got, you know, he got re-signed and was on the practice roster, and I'm rooting for the kid. I hope he, because he has NFL talent. It's just he's got to be in a place where he can, you know, continue to grow and get an opportunity. But if it certainly doesn't happen in Atlanta, we have his phone number, let me just say it that way.
Good, good. Well, that's good news for F.A. then. We hope he makes it with the Falcons, but he's got a fallback plan there. Jeff, we're out of time. I'm going to head off to the Bengals.
Well, listen, you guys are driving east and through the farm country of Indiana into Ohio, and then, you know, Cincinnati, you got to have chili three ways. Tell Jamie that the Cincinnati tradition, they call it chili three ways, and make sure you get some while you're down there watching those Bengals. I'm anxious to hear how you feel about that football team and loss of Hugh Jackson and how much that's meant and, you know, what they're doing in the transition.
Yeah, going to sit down with Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis this morning and then head to the practice and watch that and speak to players as they come off the field. Jeff, I'd go for the chili three ways, but we've got a flight to Minneapolis tonight. You know, it could be an interesting flight if I've had chili three ways. And on that note...
Hey, do me a favor. Tell Margus Hunt I said hello, will you please?
To Margus Hunt, yes.
When you get up to Minnesota, you know, Zach Lyon and Sinkfield and all those guys, tell all those kids I said hello, man. I love those guys. And I'm watching, tell them I'm rooting for them big.
I'm going to do it, Jeff. I'm going to pass on the messages. Until next week, this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Sounds like you've already got your coffee, Jeff. I'm off to find one. I'll speak to you soon. Say goodbye to the good folks.